This period in the life of David has been aptly called by one of the commentators, through trials and tribulations to the throne. In these wilderness experiences on the run from Saul, God was shaping David and trying to make him into a king. And the only way that God knows of making sinners into kings is to put them into the furnace of affliction. Trials purify and make men. In fact, words that were written of Job could very aptly describe David's experience in these wilderness years. Job said, "When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as pure gold." And it's the trial that makes and tests the gold. God is also preparing us for thrones. The New Testament says, "We shall reign with Christ." Paul said, "Do you not know that the saints shall judge the world? Do you not know that the saints shall judge angels?" The judgment of the world to come and the judgment of evil angels is something that God has committed to the church. We shall reign with Christ. And I tell you that the simplest Christian in this gathering tonight is being prepared by God to share Christ's throne and to share Christ's kingdom. And therefore, we take that as our motto this evening. Through trials and tribulations to the throne. And I want to draw your attention to three important lessons that David learned in the wilderness and that Christians too have to learn. And the first important lesson is this: David had to learn who he was. He had to discover, with the help of God, what his heart was really like. And that is an important discovery for any Christian. I said last Sunday evening that, in fact, in these wilderness experiences, David was running away. But he wasn't running away from Saul. Saul wasn't the real enemy. The real enemy was his own heart. Because he had just discovered the potentialities for wrongness that lay inside his own personality. It's always a great shock for a Christian to discover how bad he is. And it's often a great shock for a Christian to discover just what makes him tick. I remember an elderly lady with whom I had to deal some years ago. And she was the mother in a very unhappy home. It was a home that was full of conflict and aggression. You could almost feel it when you went in, the tension between the people in it. And I sort of felt that I could never make anything of her. She was a Christian woman. I wanted to know what made her tick and why it was that she was at the helm of this disturbed ship. And I discovered, in course of questions and prayer and examination, that the real trouble lay in the fact that she regarded her entire family as her rivals. And that's why she never got on with her children, because she regarded them as rivals. She was always in competition with her children. And when any of the children did something that she could do, but did it better than she could do it, then immediately there was a flare-up. She didn't really love them. She couldn't love them, because they were her rivals, and they were competitors for everything that she was and everything that she did. You see, it's always a great shock when you discover the potentialities for evil, the great reservoir that lies inside you that can harm you and spoil your life. Now, of course, David has just discovered three rather sobering facts about himself. And it's interesting that he discovered them all in the shrine at Nob. He had run to this little house of God out in the wilderness, where Ahimelech was the priest. And the first thing he discovered there was that he was an almighty liar. He barged into the church and he said to the priest, "Hurry up, I'm on the king's business." That was a lie. He was not on the king's business. He was running away from the king. That lie cost the lives of 85 priests of the Lord, not to mention a whole village of women and children, because when Saul came in, he exterminated them. That's one of the costliest lies in the Bible. Not only so, he has discovered that he is a thief, because he stole from the shrine the great sword of Goliath the giant. Now that sword was Jehovah's sword. It was one of the trophies from the battle with Goliath. And David had no right to this sword. It didn't belong to him. But he stole it. And the third thing he has discovered in his heart is a terrible propensity for profanity. You see, there was an altar inside that church, and there was bread on it, and that was God's bread. It was called the bread of the presence, because it belonged to Jehovah. It's bread that was renewed every day, the bread of the presence, the altar of showbread. And David said, "I'm starving. Give me that bread." Ahimelech said, "You can't touch that bread. That's God's food. You can't get that." But he got it. Profanity. An inability to control his appetites. Unbridled appetites, which eventually destroyed him, you know, Bathsheba and all that. Unbridled appetites. And David has just seen his heart, and he's on the run from himself. It sometimes takes, I'm sure it does, not sometimes, a lifetime of the careful therapy of God's word applied to our lives and our personalities by the Holy Spirit. It sometimes takes a lifetime of that kind of therapy to teach us who we are. That's why St. Augustine always used to say that the older he got, the worse he got. He really was a better man the older he got. But the older he got, the more he looked into his heart and saw the propensities for wrongdoing inside a Christian heart. Now David is the Lord's anointed. He's God's man. He's the king. Saul's on the throne, but David is the king. And here is a king who has discovered his own heart. Have you discovered your heart? It can be an awful shock to discover the deviousness, the slyness, the cunning, the powers for manipulating people that lie inside Christian hearts. Rule one in Christian service: know your heart. Second lesson is this: if you're going to be remade, then you must be remade in the context of fellowship. You see, in order to be made into a king, God had to put David into the cave of Adullam, where 600 men, now at a first reading, it looks like riffraff. David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. I like that. I like a man who is such a leader that even his own family respect him. Very hard, you know, prophets having no honor in their own country and amongst their own kindred. Jesus had no honor amongst his own. David's family came and followed him as a leader. And everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was discontented gathered to him, and he became captain over them. And there were with him about 400 men. Now you see, at a first reading, that looks like a collection of gangsters. All the people who were in debt, and all the people who were gurning and complaining. But you see, these are not gangsters. These are the godly men in Israel who are dissatisfied with Saul's ministry and with Saul's kingship. They were in distress because of Saul. They were in debt because of Saul. You see, Saul was a farmer. I wonder why there was so much debt in the land when he was king. He was a farmer. Was he beginning to speculate in land? Were there shady deals? Like the men in London who build tower blocks and put nobody into them, just keep them standing there till the price goes sky high, and then when the price is rocketing, they sell them. Gangsters. Land gangsters, speculators. Is this why they're in debt? And everyone who was discontented gathered to him. And it is as if God said to him, David, my lad, I want to make you into a king. And the only way I know how to do it is to throw you into that lot. Wesley once said, the Bible knows nothing of solitary Christianity. If you want a do-it-yourself religion, don't become a Christian. Become a Hindu and lie on a bed of nails, or sit in a thorn bush contemplating the infinite. Become a Buddhist. There's no fellowship in Buddhist temples or Hindu temples. They've no services such as we have, with prayers and singing. These temples are open all the time and people drift in and out, but there's no fellowship. Oh, if you want to do it yourself, go it alone religion, do not become a Christian. Because God takes people, some of them very odd people, and He throws them into the Christian church. And that's where you get the rough edges knocked off your personality. That's where you get all the chips knocked off your shoulder, if you are going to be remade at all. Then you will have to be remade in the context of Christian fellowship. That's the message of the cave of Adullam. And that's the second lesson David had to learn. And the third lesson he had to learn was this. And what a lesson it is for Christians. What do you do to your enemy when God hands him to you on a plate in a cave in a very embarrassing position? Six 600 men in the darkness, and David calling himself a dead dog and a flea. And here is poor Saul in his embarrassing position. What do you do when God hands your enemy on a plate? I tell you what to do. You kill him with kindness. Lesson one, find out who you are. Lesson two, be remade in fellowship. Lesson three, the meek shall inherit the earth. David wrote about that. You see, the God we worship tonight is a God who wins by losing. You advance by retreating. You win your victories by suffering defeats. Watch judo players. They'll teach you about Christianity. You know, it's one of the secrets of judo, that you almost allow your opponent to overwhelm you. You expose yourself to him. And just at the very point when he moves in for the kill, you flick your wrist and he's finished. You see, judo is an art in which weaknesses are converted into strength. That's one of the great secrets of the Christian life. That if you want to win your enemy, then you kill him with kindness. I remember 6 years ago playing a game of draft with a chap who shares the same birthday as me. We're having great fun. And I can't play draughts at all. I can't play any games. I don't like games. None, no game. Not snakes and ladders. Nothing. I cannot stand them. Dominoes. Can't stand them. Well, we finally got down to, he had three crowned men and I had two crowned men, and I looked very dismally at the board, and then I remembered my Bible. And I said to him, "Well, Laurie," I said, "I think you've beat me this time. I'll just surrender. So I'll make my move." So I made my move and he made his move, and he didn't see. But of course he had exposed his final man to me. So I won the game after all. But you see, I won it by losing. I said, "Come on, I'll surrender. I'm finished now." Just like the judo player who moves back and twists back until it seems as if his enemy has just about wiped him out. Jesus did that on the cross. it seemed as if he was finished. No one standing there that day could possibly believe that this man hanging there was the judge of the universe. Would you have believed that day at Golgotha that that man could deliver you from the bondage of sin? It's absurd. But it worked. You see, the meek shall inherit the earth. Let me quote you some words from Søren Kierkegaard, the Dutch thinker, preacher, Christian, existentialist, and a lot of other things. Listen to what he says in his book, The Voice from the Temple. For long, the tactics have been, use every means to move as many as you can, to move everybody, if possible, to enter Christianity. Do not be too curious whether what they enter is Christianity. My tactics have been, with God's help, to use every means to make it clear what the demand of Christianity really is. Even if no one entered it. You win by losing. Peter didn't learn this, you see. In the garden, he grabs a sword. He wants to fight for the kingdom. He wants to bring in the kingdom by violence. Jesus said, you silly man, is that all you've learned from me? Put down your sword. Those who live by the sword will die by it. You win by losing. The king comes. And he comes on a donkey. You want to be a king? You learn to ride the donkey. The king comes and he washes the disciples' feet. If you want to be anybody, learn to wash the disciples' feet. The way up is the way down. If you want to go up, then learn to go down. David learned this lesson. He wrote a psalm about it. You know the words? I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of wickedness. Well, this is what the Hebrew says. I would rather be a doormat in the house of my God than dwell in tents of wickedness. Nothing very attractive about a doormat. You can't get into the house without standing on it. You win by losing. Yes, that's the message. When God hands your enemy to you on a plate, poor soul. Oh, if David had caught him then, the stories that would have gone round. But David let him go free. And it was David who won. Let's learn that lesson, shall we? And may God add a blessing to the preaching of his own word.